You know, oh, it's the start of something, hopefully.
This is the Garibaldi Gazette, a podcast about two-time European champions Nottingham Forest. On this episode, shocking season card prices, the latest biggest game of the season previewed, and the latest beef with Wolves reviewed, giving it the full 24%. This is the Garibaldi Gazette. Welcome back then, listener. Hope you're doing okay. Bit of a different show for you today. We've got a double dose of David Marple's voice notes, which is something to look forward to, but no Arsha Ali or Nick Miller, both tied up either with work or vacation. So it's me, Matt Davis Adams, joined again by the fabulous Steve Wright. How are you doing, Steve?
Yeah, good things. I did wonder what we'd do this time, and then Forest delivered all on their own.
They sure did. It was the same for me yesterday. I was planning the show thinking, we don't actually have that much on the agenda. And then I saw this and thought, oh, that's going to give us something to talk about. And then I read it and my blood boiled. We are going to start with the season ticket price increase. But before we get there, let me start by asking you for a favor. Could you leave us a nice review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts? Follow us on X at the Garibaldi G or on Instagram at the Garibaldi Gazette and the same handle on YouTube, where you can watch the show. It's the best way to help other Forest supporters find our podcast. And none of those things will cost you a penny, unlike a Forest season card. So the club dropped a costly bombshell on Tuesday when it announced that season ticket slash card prices will go up by an average of 24% next season, regardless of whether we're in the Premier League or the Championship. I'll get Steve's thoughts momentarily, but our friend David Marples was so vexed, he sent us a bonus voice note.
They say you should never send an email when you are angry, but you never hear it said that you should never record a voice note when you are angry. So here goes. It's Tuesday afternoon. Season card prices have just dropped for next season. The brass neck on those brass monkeys. I find myself staring at the graphic of the ground we love, now split into zones, not stands. I find myself scrolling back through my notes on my season card prices from previous years. Yes, of course, I have made a note of these in the notes app and keep it on my phone. I do some quick calculations, and I'm astonished to see how much an adult and a senior renewal will be, and more presciently, how much it has risen over the last three or four seasons. We all know the stages. Denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance. Yep, all of these. But superseding them, I feel like a total idiot. I'm not a supporter, I'm a unit of cost, and if my unit isn't good enough for them, they will find another unit. They pretty much say this in the accompanying guff, the bit about the long waiting list for a season ticket. According to Marx, reification is the process by which human social relations are perceived as inherent attributes of the people involved in them, or attributes of some kind product of the relation that is a traded commodity. That's Carl, by the way, not Harpo or Richard. Although coming from Harpo, it might be slightly funny were it not so tragically true. I'm obviously very angry at everyone, the club, for their obvious greed and the reasons behind their obvious greed. They will point to how competitive the prices are and how everyone else is doing it and how this is the necessary means if we are going to compete. Yeah, whatever. You just keep telling yourselves so that you can sleep easier at night. Meanwhile, we'll remember the millions squandered on the players who contributed nothing, the drop in the ocean that such rises are compared to the TV millions, the fact that you had an opportunity here to stand out from the rest, to do something different, to be the special club we all hoped you are, to acknowledge how football without fans is nothing, and acknowledge those 20-odd years of mediocrity watched by so many of us, while those who decided on these prices were elsewhere doing other things. We don't expect a personalised cake, but give us more than a lazy platitude. I hear that rewarding loyalty is big in marketing in the corporate world. Give it some consideration, eh? I'm angry at the body that haven't held the club's feet close enough to the fire on this. They should have been challenged before now, but they've clearly reached a stage where they feel they can get away with this. I'm angry at football in general, especially high-level football where exploitation is rampant. I'm angry at football fans in general for not putting tribalism aside and coming together to take a stand on this and doing more like cross-fan protests. But most of all, listener, I'm angry at myself. Angry for being an obsessed football fan, angry for having paid so much in the past, angry for no doubt continuing to pay so much in the future. I wish I wasn't like this, I wish I wasn't built this way, I wish I was able to take a year out and see how it all goes and maybe come back to it all. But these days, that's just not possible. And I genuinely wish I could do that. I'm slightly embarrassed too for all of the above. I'm reminded of a lyric from a band I like. They appropriated everything we ever loved and dressed it up in quotations and fluff. Los Campesinos there. The club have taken all that is special and marketed it with quotation, fluff and cold, hard, grubby extortionate rises in cold, hard cash. At other clubs, it is possible to pay cost value on a monthly basis, but with no interest or admin fee. Other clubs know what league they will be playing next season. Other clubs haven't been charged with lost points through spending too much money. And yet, here we are. Well done, Forrest. Well done for making the vast majority of supporters feel like idiots. Kudos.
I'm not a supporter, I'm a unit of cost, was the key line for me there, I think. So, Steve, the most expensive adult season ticket will be on sale for £850. That's up from £660. The cheapest has gone from £465 to £550. And it's the adjustment of the age brackets, which has really riled some people as well. What were your first thoughts when you read this? Because we knew a price rise was coming.
Yeah, I mean, I, unsurprisingly, I'm very much on the same page as David is around it. But I think so much about modern football, isn't it? It's a bit of a paradox. You can look at both sides of an argument and you can make a rational basis for, you know, why prices go up around elite sport, around the demands of the Premier League. It's also easy to kind of roll out these reasons why you might increase ticket prices and there might be a need for this, that and the other. But at heart, it just feels like such another break between fans and clubs and the game. And there's a real, I don't know, there's a sense that we're just getting pushed out more and more all the time. And this is just another part of it. Partly it's the overall price, but in some ways it's not even just that. It's these changes in categorizations. It's these massive uplifts that certain people experience. And then combined with a short period of time in which to respond. So here's a big increase in your price. You've got 4 weeks to decide whether or not you're going to pay it. And if not, we've got 10,000 people waiting in the wings, so don't worry about it too much. It's that mentality that just feels like it's completely changed the relationship between a club and its fans. And I'm probably prone to, you know, a bit of nostalgia and maybe a little bit of rose-tinted spectacles about the past. And I think it's important that we don't try and claim, you know, kind of golden ages and things like this and misrepresent what the past was like. But I'm finding it harder and harder, I have to admit, to find my place in the game as it stands at the moment.
Yeah, I think many of us feel that way. I think one of the many things that really grates about this is the fact that you can say we want to be competitive in the Premier League and that's why prices go up, but we might not be in the Premier League next season and the prices will be the same regardless. That really strikes me as sort of dunderheaded from the club to think that they can get away with that, with the status of what league we're going to be in next season so insecure at the moment. Obviously they have to get their season card renewals done before the end of the current campaign, or they don't have to, but that's the way that it's chosen to do. But it makes it even more difficult to swallow, doesn't it? Because it's one thing paying premium prices for a premium product, but if you're playing Preston rather than Manchester City, then that becomes something quite different.
Yeah, and I think as well, I accept that there is a way of following football that is probably, you know, quite prevalent now, that is a perfectly reasonable way of doing it. And it's that, you know, you've got to be in the Premier League. That's where the focus is. You know, that means you've got to pay top dollar. That means you've got to be prepared to allow for all the changes that take place because it's a global TV audience and you've got to adjust to that and you're not as important as you maybe feel that you might be. as somebody who goes to games and has loved the club for your entire life and received it from family, at core, I don't care what league we're in. You know, obviously I do. I want to win. I want to win football matches. I want to win trophies. I want glory and all of those great things. But fundamentally, going to the football is something that, you know, came down from my dad, was passed on to my son. And what we're effectively now saying is we're going to make it harder for sons to go with their dads and daughters with their mums. And we're going to make it harder even for dads and granddads to go along, because we're going to get rid of these sort of concessions and we're going to make it more expensive for all of these different groups that have previously maybe had allowances. And for me, that's what football is all about. It's going to the game with your family, with your friends, meeting up with the same people. It's the generations, it's the season after season, and it's the connection back to 100 and however many years of history. The other night, my dad was around here with some bits and pieces from Forest history that we were looking at. There's some amazing stuff going way, way back into the latter stages of the 1800s of what this club means and the people that were involved with it. It's something really, really special. And what we're losing now is we're losing all of that for the sake of a momentary kind of period that eventually is going to pass one way or another, you know. And I get the argument that we're in the Premier League because of, you know, the owner's money and all this kind of thing. There was a lot else to it, a lot of luck and, you know, a certain man who walked into the club and then very quickly was kind of pushed out the other side of it. But that's not the core of what this is all about. And whichever league we're in, to alienate the people who are in the stand in favour of this Premier League global franchise, it just riles with me against everything that I kind of believe in.
Yeah, and just to reinforce the point on the age brackets, last season supporters between the ages of 12 and 19 were eligible to purchase a youth season ticket. Those bandings have changed. The bracket is now 14 to 17-year-olds only. And Nick mentioned this on Twitter, and he got some replies from people saying that their kids' season tickets had gone from £45 to £190 for an 8-year-old, and an 18-year-old whose cost has gone from £190 to £850. That's obviously not sustainable and frankly ridiculous, but there's an issue with, you know, once you're 18, you're classified as an adult, but you're not going to be earning the kind of money that can pay that. And as you've alluded to, Steve, the problem is the short-termism of it, because these people between the ages of 14 to 18 particularly, that's when you really indoctrinate yourself in football and football and fan culture, isn't it? And you want to be able to see your team in the flesh. If not, you might as well be going to Basford, because that's where you'll get your fix from, not a Premier League ground where you can't afford to go once, never mind for the season.
Yeah, and I mean, if all it comes down to is we need to compete, so we need more money, and I think there's counter arguments to that anyway about how much of a proportion of our revenue this is going to drive versus the pain it's going to cause for the people involved.
What I wanted to bring it on to, Steve, was the latest post on Twitter by the club as we record at just gone 11 o'clock on Wednesday morning. Now over 11,000 fans signed up to our official season card waiting list since launch, an incredible demonstration of the huge demand to follow Forest. Thank you. The wording of that's really interesting, isn't it? The huge demand. You know, you guys, you better hurry up and renew, because there are people ready and willing to take your place. That's quite an assumption, isn't it? And it also can be potentially really divisive and set supporters against one another, which kind of goes against the whole ethos of what supporting a club should be.
Yeah, and it tells you a lot, doesn't it, about what we truly are to the people that are running the club. And I don't deny that there, you know, there have been good things done, and that we've seen, you know, obviously in terms of short-term results, we've seen positive impacts. But that is huge. I mean, and the power of supporting the club, what it actually means to you deep down. I mean, I've kind of been in a situation recently, because my son went off to university and we decided that he should focus on that and we should not be demanding him back every kind of other Saturday to go to the football. We kind of stopped going as season ticket holders, but that pull is still there even when you're not actually going to the games all the time. It's unbreakable, the connection with your club. And you can't even just say, I mean, I watch a fair amount of non-league football and stuff, and it's great. And I've got an affection for those clubs, certainly, but there's nothing like the connection that I will always have to Forest, because it's just a part of who I am. It's that kind of visceral and clear cut that I can never break that connection with the club. And yet that communication really tells you, you know, the relationship is not reciprocal, at least not in its current form. I mean, as I was kind of thinking about, am I getting carried away? Do we need to move with the times? All that kind of stuff that can get thrown at people who kind of balk at these sorts of announcements and things. I kind of went back to source. I went and got these off my shelf, which was an absolute delight after I met. I absolutely loved looking back and thinking, oh, those were good times, weren't they? I did enjoy doing that. Those are the last
beautiful issues of Bandy and Shinty, if you're listening, issues. Not watching.
Yeah, the last two issues of Bandy and Shinty, in which I tried to go out with a bang. We knew we were coming to an end. And my last two pieces in Bandy and Shinty were one about values and about what is the core of this club and the history of this club and how do we link it all together and give ourselves an identity. So that's something I've always felt we've needed, but we haven't really ever managed to quite capture. And then the final one was kind of trying to just sum it all up through three football books that I'd read that kind of said everything to me about football and about following football. And I went back and read it kind of over the last sort of 24 hours, been looking at it and reflecting on it. And it's 5 years now, I think, since we stopped doing Bandy and Shinty, but it just all just came flooding back as, you know, this is what we're losing and this is what we need to get back to and claim. And it's important that we've got something more than the fact that we're currently in the Premier League, or we might maybe one day we'll be mid-table Premier League. Wow. That's not the core. That's obviously game by game, season by season. We're looking to win. We're looking to progress. But we've got to have some core things that hold us all together and unite us with this club. And it felt like we've had an opportunity to really grasp that. You know, I mean, during Steve Cooper's period, that unity of crowd was remarkable. We had an opportunity to do something. And over the last few months, we've spectacularly tried to disrupt that, you know, and spoil it and take away any opportunity instead of building on it and laying down some real foundations that could set us up for the future. We've actually kind of picked it apart, and we seem to have gone back to this sense that now we're, you know, it's almost a fight to get into who should be in the ground, who deserves to be in the ground. And, you know, we've all just gone our separate ways again, which is really sad.
Yeah, and as you would expect, this has invoked the ire of the Supporters Trust and Forza Garibaldi. Supporters Trust said it's accepted that season card pricing at Forest have been at the lower end of other PL clubs. However, such extreme increases during the ongoing cost of living crisis will massively impact a large number of loyal fans and undoubtedly mean many are priced out of renewing. Forza, who put a long statement up on their website, included the line, "We expect far better from a club that has spoken only very recently about how it prides itself on helping its community. They are withdrawing plans for flags and banners at the Manchester City game." This is where it becomes difficult, isn't it, for people who are match-going supporters, because you want to show your anger in some form of protest, but we're at a vital point of the season and you want to still show the team that you're behind them and want them to win the games that they're playing in. And maybe this plays into why the announcement was made now, because people don't think that supporters will protest at the game. But that link that we've spoken about with Forza in the last few weeks and everything that they've done, that's now at risk of being threatened as well. Are other clubs just thinking, well, at this stage of the season, given what's at stake and who we're playing, these people will just blindly support us, whatever. And if they don't, then some of the 11,000 will fill in for them.
It's hard not to be cynical, isn't it, about the whole piece and the way that it's been done, because it's partly to get it out in time to make sure that, you know, we're not relegated before this, you know, so you've got to sign up before you know. So the timing in that sense leaves everybody, you know, not really knowing what they're buying. Then rolling out quite quickly afterwards an announcement about safe standing to kind of try and give, oh, there's the fan engagement piece. Look, we've listened. Here's a bit of safe standing. And then roll out the waiting list. That felt like a very thought through process in terms of, you know, how are we going to put this message across, and it felt like one that was aware of what they were doing, knew what the backlash was going to be, and was trying to immediately kind of set everybody against each other again, deflect the initial criticism and make it so that we were criticizing each other for our responses rather than the club for its actions. And it's hard not to be cynical again when you see the way that Forza Garibaldi are treated. I mean, I'm not, you know, in that group. I've always admired it, occasionally have helped out with bits and pieces, but not really sort of central to it. I can't imagine what it feels like to be central to it when you spend all this time, you put all of this energy doing something really, really positive. The club jumps on it. I mean, how many times have those displays been used in marketing and, you know, to talk in the terms of the modern football club, how much value has been added to their activities as a result of the, you know, the efforts of Forza Garibaldi that are entirely to do with supporting the club and being connected to this club. And then they ask for anything and it seems to be a knockback. And, you know, it's the relationship is the supporters' trust. It's interesting that the tone of the supporters' trust seems to be changing a little bit just at the moment. You fear that it's too little, too late. I don't know how many people are in the supporters' trust these days, but it feels like, you know, there's perhaps a nudging towards something a little bit more like we'd hoped that organisation might be. But again, it feels like the relationship with the supporters' trust from the club was always about, it was a power relationship. You know, the club was able to use that when it wanted to, whilst ignoring it when it mattered. And you fear that the same relationship is probably there with things like Forza Garibaldi, which, I mean, to my mind, they're unique. I mean, I can't see that anywhere else in the country. I can't see stuff that's done with such dedication and such quality and such thought, or all the little minor details that they go into in order to really express something very special. I don't see that anywhere else in the country. And if I'm honest, I don't think the current sort of structure at the club understands anything about what they are trying to do.
Well, for the club's part, in the article on the website with this announcement, it stated that it was one of the most affordable season cards in the Premier League. Again, we might not be in the Premier League. Child tickets, £10 per game for any area of the stadium. Youth tickets, £15 per game for any area of the stadium. Adults from under £30 per game. And they also say our highest priced adult season card is the sixth cheapest in the Premier League. Well, the team are currently 17th in the Premier League and have been given a points deduction essentially for financial mismanagement. So that strikes me as pretty tone deaf as well. We mentioned that the safe standing thing, Steve, on another day that could have been greeted with some sort of cheer, but we just can't really feel that at the moment, can we? I mean, is that necessary? Do you think that's going to make much of a difference to the atmosphere? Will that even make a difference to some people's decision whether to renew or not?
I think it is necessary. I think it's something that, you know, I mean, Forza have done a lot of work on this for a long time now, and very detailed work. You know, they're not just kind of sat on the sidelines saying, you know, we need to have safe standing. They've done the yards, and they've, you know, they've done the research into it. They've got the contacts in different places that have run with it. And I think it is an important move. It'd be interesting to see a little bit more detail about what are we actually planning? What type of safe standing are we planning? Which areas of the ground? How available will it be? It doesn't look like it's going to deliver a more affordable way of people attending football, but it at least gives them a kind of a different way of watching. But yeah, it's delivering these little bits of things that are supposed to kind of offset the negativity. And my sense is that maybe it's a misjudgment, I don't know, maybe it's unfair, but so much of what the club does feels like it's just there to offset what is actually a much more disturbing overarching narrative. And then I say that word and immediately think, oh, no, you're overplaying it again, aren't you? But that's how it feels. Do you know what I mean? That's how it feels to be in the midst of this. And maybe it's a generational thing. I don't know, maybe younger fans don't feel it in quite the same way, but it does feel like everything is being taken away in the way that these decisions are being made. largely really for a guy who's actually told us, really, hasn't he? He's trying to rewrite our history, but he's not, he's doing it in a way that's just trying to write himself into it. And I think there's something about the tone and the character of the way that you do things that says a lot about what the underlying sort of themes are. And we have this sort of narrative, don't we, about all the Sky stuff and football started in 1992. You know, it just feels like Marinakis is trying to tell us that football, you know, Forest started when he walked through the door, and there's tone deaf to everything else that came before that, which for certainly for those of us that were around, and as people obviously, you know, we go back all of these years, we've somehow just lost that connection, and we need to find that connection back to it.
Yeah, it took so long to build, and it's taken so little time to shatter, really. It's worth remembering as well that when Steve Cooper came in, Forest were heading for League One. They were bottom of the championship, and that was under Evangelos Marinakis' watch as well. This is going to be something that will run and run over the next few weeks, so we will continue reporting on it. I think just to finish, though, just by some way of context, if you think we're over-exaggerating a little bit here, by comparison, Arsenal have raised their season ticket prices by around 5%, Spurs 6%, United and City, the Manchester clubs, both going up by 5% as well. Liverpool planning protests because of their costs being put up. But it's just not commensurate, is it, Steve, the final point, with what we're seeing on the pitch and where Forest are as a club. You understand that Manchester United, Manchester City can attract supporters who can afford this kind of thing now, and they're tempted to do it, and they're obviously far higher up the league than we are, but it just doesn't sit right with a team that are battling relegation. If we look at this purely on footballing terms rather than financial terms and the status of Nottingham as a city and, you know, the general level of finance that the people who are coming to the game have, just as if we're going to be customers and see this as a product, this isn't worth the money that we're being charged for it.
And you might as well all go and support Man City, might we? If that's what it is, if it's just about where we are as well, how many games we win, what position we are in the league, and therefore we need to get money and we need, you know, billionaire owners and we need this, that and the other to achieve it. Well, why don't we all just go and support the team that's winning? I want to support Nottingham Forest. I want to support the team that I grew up with and that my, you know, as I say, that I inherited in my family and passed on in my family. And I want to be able to identify what that is. And I think these conversations, they get a little bit kind of, they lose the thread a bit, don't they? And because it's the real heart of it. It's difficult to rationalize, because it isn't rational. It's something beyond that. It's emotional. And that's why it's hard to kind of have a sensible kind of debate about these things, because they matter deep down inside, and it's that these things are touching, and it's very easy to cast that aside and to tell people it's not important, but it is. It's fundamental, and that's why we end up in situations where people can accuse us of getting carried away and focusing on the wrong things. But actually, how can you not focus on the thing that is actually such a big part of who you are and your identity?
Yeah, that's the thing. We love them, but maybe they don't love us back. Sorry if that was a bit scattergun. We've done our best to cover it. We tried to be balanced about it, but as you can tell, it is a very emotive issue and something that's left, I think, everybody pretty upset. All right, we'll get back to matters on the pitch next. Well, Forest and Wolves played out a 2-2 draw at the City Ground on Saturday. This podcast is increasingly becoming merely a vehicle for the much-vaunted David Marple's voice note, so let's get straight into that.
Frieda Monk of Nottingham had poor timing. On the 11th of April 1936, so eager was she to be the first camper at the newly opened Butlins Holiday Camp in Skegness that she rocked up at the gates in her finest apparel, determined to enjoy whatever this fancy new experience had to offer. Sadly for her, she was a day too early. The grand opening was the following day. She'd got her dates mixed up. No doubt the redcoats inside the camp were wondering what this person hanging around outside was up to while they swept up, polished the boards and made final adjustments to the fitting of their famous blazers. Being generally good eggs, they invited her in anyway, gave her dinner and a chalet to stay in, although no doubt the smell of fresh paint wafted around Frieda Monk's nostrils all night. Frieda Monk's timing was not great. Neither was Ben Foles. After achieving a degree of success in the 90s with his three-piece band, confusingly called Ben Folds 5, he decided to go solo and made an album all by himself, one in which he played the majority of the instruments, even the drums, talented know-it-all that he is. But there was a slight snafu. This debut album, Rockin' the Suburbs, was released on 11th September 2001, a day in which it is fair to say that other things happened. Ben's timing was not great either. The Slade brothers' timing, or more specifically, the timing of a train in Southampton on April 10th, 1912, was substantially luckier. On April 6th, 1912, brothers Alfred, Tom and Bertram Slade all signed on as firemen on the Titanic. After reporting on board at 8 a.m. on April 10th, they decided to pass the time before boarding in one of Southampton's many pubs, specifically the Greats, conveniently close to the docks. At 11:15, they were joined by crewmates John Podesta and William Nutbean, who had been drinking elsewhere, but decided to chance one last drink with the Slades. Eventually, and no doubt suitably imbibed, they left the Grapes to make their way to the Titanic. However, a passenger train on its way to the docks drew up and blocked their way. They had left it late and were now cutting it fine, and the train was a long one. The Slades were quite relaxed and, according to Podesta, said, "Oh, let the train go by." However, Podesta, Nutbeam and a fireman from the ship were not to be deterred and didn't want to risk being late, so they dashed across the train lines just in front of the train, leaving the Slade brothers behind. By the time the brothers reached the White Star dock, it was 11:59 and the gangplank was just being drawn up. The officer in charge of the gangway refused to lower it. As it happened, and the Titanic being a bit of a big deal and supposedly a good gig to get, firemen and workers were in plentiful supply around Southampton docks that day, and the Slade brothers were replaced. They did not board the big boat. Those who replaced the Slade brothers did not return. The timing of that train worked out rather well for the Slade brothers. Their timing was good. Just in case you were wondering, John Podesta and William Nutbeam managed to survive the sinking. Someone else who has good timing? Danilo dos Santos de Oliveira. Danny, or Daniel, or Danilo, to you and me. Quite liking Daniel, to be honest, though. The clocks have gone back. April is in full swing. Lambs are frolicking and Easter eggs have been consumed. Chico's time has come and gone. It's now Danilo time. Danilo is no longer typing. Danilo has entered the chat. Just like last year, his rummaging down the back of the sofa has come up trumps, as amongst the fluff, crisps and uneaten boiled sweets, he has found his form, and he's goddamn going to use it. This time last year, he scored in three successive games, and he was at it again on Saturday. His timing is good. Bad timing? Well, not so much bad timing as continued lack of timing to head or kick the round thing far away from our goal when defending a corner kick. But we know all about this. It does none of us any good to dwell on it. No good can come of this. Divock Origi could not have picked a better time to scamper clear on goal in the 90th minute, but a metaphorical train blocked the path to his goal. Unlike Podesta and Nutbeam, he did not take decisive action, but rather, like the Slade brothers, dithered and dallied and just waited for fate to take its own course. The ball sailed into the doldrums between the far post and Chris Wood. His timing and accuracy was not great. Oh God, Everton. With their battering ram attack reminiscent of cannonballs raining down like the Battle of Helm's Deep, or the slings and arrows of outrageous bad fortune like in the Battle of the Bastards, it's going to be muck, nettles, bee stings, paper cuts, stub toes, banged heads, smashes to the skull, knees to the chest, tummy aches, standing on rakes, bitten tongues and things going wrong. Or maybe it's not. Maybe everything is going to be all right. Not fantastic or life-affirming, but just about all right. In a week in which the North America continent enjoyed a total eclipse, we are going to need some heroes. Ideally, ones with excellent timing.
All right, it's Goodison next for Forest. The game against Everton will preview shortly. But first, we have a charity partner who you can donate to if you are able. They're called Hope Nottingham. They offer a food bank service for those in need in Notts. Here's Nigel Adams from the charity to tell us more.
Hope Nottingham runs a network of 14 community hubs and food banks across the Nottingham area, everywhere from Stapleford across to Netherfield. In the last year, we've given out 25,000 food parcels for people that are struggling with all kinds of difficulty. due to cost of living, due to unemployment, due to homelessness, all sorts of different issues. But we're only able to do that because we get massive, wonderful support from so many people. And Nottingham Forest, actually, in recent years, have been really helpful to us. We've done a number of food bank collections at the ground through Nottingham Forest. And the massive support that we get across the city, we're able to bring hope to hundreds of people.
To donate, visit localgiving.org/hopenotstgg. You can find that link in the show notes as well. All right, you better steel yourself because it's a trip to Goodison Park on Sunday. Up next for Forest, the biggest game since the last one, just a point and a place between the sides ahead of the weekend's action, thanks to Chelsea putting six past Everton on Monday night to mean they're on minus 16 goal difference, which is exactly the same as Forest. It's a real cliche, Steve, but if Forest start well here, that could make all the difference, because there's no way that Everton can't be affected by the fact that they got absolutely hammered on Monday night. I was there to see that game, and the away end was maybe 5% full by the end of the match. So they've got to be feeling nervous coming into this one, Everton.
Yeah, I mean, it was a crushing defeat for them, wasn't it? And they also had players go off injured. I guess they're going to be looking for a response, so maybe, but they don't feel like a club that at the moment is primed for a big response. They feel like a club that is really struggling with itself. But it seems like we've been going on for weeks and weeks now in pretty much the same position. You know, we've been around this notion of we could go down, and every result we tick off, it doesn't seem to get us any closer to knowing, are we going to stay up? Are we going to go down? I did think after the Fulham game, to be fair, I was on a particular high at that point, because I thought that performance showed that we'd got the quality to stay up, which we have. I'm sure we have. But this is the game where you think, well, this could really start to define what's going to happen, because if we win this game, there's a gap, there's a confidence. You've knocked Everton back even further. And I know they've got other games against teams at the bottom, but they start to look like a club that's on a real downer. If we lose it, then it goes the other way. Probably going to draw, aren't we?
I wonder if, given what we've been speaking about for the majority of the pod, I know we've only won three away games since we're going back into the Premier League, but might this actually work in our favour that this game's not being played at the City Ground? We know that our away support will be vocal. Everton will be booing the Premier League anthem before the game even gets underway. So maybe, actually, this being at Goodison rather than the City Ground is a good thing?
I think it might be. I mean, booing the Premier League anthem is kind of one thing, but I think you just get the sense as well, if we can get off to a good start, the crowd will start turning against their own team as well. You know, it doesn't feel like it's so much of a, you know, they use this term, don't they, the galvanizing impact of all of these points deductions and things like that. It feels like they're probably beyond that point now. And if we can get off to a good start and put them on the back foot, then actually their fans will get nervous and not be comfortable. And that can, you know, relay back onto the pitch and affect their team as well. I'm at that point where I don't know if I even want to watch it. I don't know if I want to be anywhere near it. I just want to know what the result is and move on. It's going to be torturous for either side. You know, even if you go ahead, you know, you're constantly thinking, well, what's coming next? Are we going to blow it? Are they going to get a corner? If we go behind, obviously, then you start sort of going through all the different scenarios of what could happen if we do end up going down. It's just going to be a really hard watch, I think, for absolutely everybody. So it probably is best that, you know, most of our fans are watching it from a distance, and their fans are watching it close up and are having to express those emotions to their players on a sort of minute-by-minute basis.
You mentioned corners there. So we conceded one against Wolves, and obviously they scored from it. As I say, I was at the Chelsea-Everton game on Monday, and every time Everton got a corner, it looked like they were going to score. And it wasn't like they did anything sophisticated. They basically had James Tarkowski just running off the far post. Chelsea, for some reason, put Cole Palmer as the man to pick him up. He couldn't do it. He nods it back across goal. Somebody turns it in. We've spoken about the set-piece coach at Forest not being utilised. If ever there was a week to do it, it's this. But this is going to be the key thing in the game, right? Particularly if Calvert-Lewin's not playing, because Beto looks like he couldn't score in a month of Sundays. They are just going to load the box from set pieces, knowing that Forest are vulnerable. So it's up to us to try and deal with it. But given what we've seen so far this season, it's difficult to have any optimism that we're actually going to be able to do that.
No, and it has been, it's such a long time now, isn't it? So it's hard to imagine that we can suddenly say, well, this week we're going to focus on that and solve that problem, because it just doesn't feel like it's that simple a problem to solve in all aspects of what we do. You know, I mean, the goalie, it's been feeling like we've made an improvement there with the keeper overall. And I've seen some stats flying around that might question that, but I'm never quite sure about when people present stats, exactly what they're really saying. But Crikey flapped at that one, didn't he? And we collectively just don't seem to know what to do when that ball comes in high to the box. And I don't know how, whether even a week's training of purely that is going to really solve that issue. So, and it must play on their minds as well. You know, it's that thing again, if the fans are feeding into the players, the players must also, kind of their hearts must sink a bit when there's a corner or a free kick in a position where it can be sort of played long in. And with Everton, that's virtually anywhere a free kick can be played long in by Pickford taking them and whipping them into that far post. So, yeah, it's not going to be a pleasurable experience, is it, this weekend? But it might be one that we're glad to get through and see what it looks like at the other side.
Finally, in terms of the Forest team then, I think the big debate has been whether Nicolas Dominguez and his athleticism should see him start in place of Ryan Yates and his industry. But given this is going to be a real kind of muck and nettles game, this one feels like it's made for Yates, really. Would you agree?
It does, really. And it's that kind of crucial little element, isn't it? That Yates is just kind of, it just winds people up. And that could go against him in a game like this, but it also could go massively for us in terms of if the Everton team are feeling a bit edgy already, they've taken a heavy defeat, maybe their fans are starting to get at them a little bit in the game, and then Yates, he comes along and gives them his niggle. That could have quite an impact. And, you know, in the light of that kind of recent stuff from Danny Taylor and that around the youth and the consistency of having somebody from the youth, if it's a fine decision between the two, let's keep that going for a little bit longer and bit Yatesy anyway.
Everton's remaining games, they've got Liverpool in the Merseyside derby after this. They've got three home games in a row, then Brentford, they go to Luton, host Sheffield United and finish at Arsenal. So I guess we're looking for Arsenal to still be in the title race at that point to try and help us out. But Forest, it's still in their own hands as it goes. So we have 5 games left. I mean, really, Everton, Sheffield United and Burnley, the away games are the ones that look more likely to produce something. We're going to have to win at least one of those, right?
Yeah, and you look at all of these run-ins and you start thinking, you know, oh, they could win so many, they could win so many. And then you look at the results up to now and you think, are we all going to have this massive turnaround in form where we suddenly win all this many games? So in reality, probably we're all going to just pick up a handful of points each, and we're not going to, you know, it's not going to be 4 wins out of 5 that gets us out of it or anything. It's going to be something much more realistic. So I kind of look at those and I think you can look at everybody's run-ins and come up with probably putting everybody in a different order. You know, we could all do it and we find out that nobody gets the same team going down. We're all in the mix at the end of the day, and it's just picking up whatever points we can. But because of the context of everything that's leading into this one, it just feels like a very significant game, especially with Man City coming up next. You know, we don't want to drop below again. I think that's the thing, isn't it? Once you drop back into that, if we drop into the bottom three and then face City, that could be quite a demoralising prospect. So anything that keeps us just above water, I think at this point is what we're looking for.
And we'll know more by the time this game kicks off, because Saturday, Luton host Brentford and it's Sheffield United, Burnley as well. Everton versus Forest is 1:30 UK time. It will be on telly on Sky Sports if you can face it. You will be watching it, Steve, won't you? Be honest.
Oh, I'll absolutely be watching it, but won't be enjoying it.
No, same. Look, whatever happens, we'll react to it on next week's show. Hopefully, we'll be talking about a massive step towards survival and a total vault fast from the club on ticket prices. Maybe not. Remember, you can leave us a nice review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your pods. Follow us on Twitter/X @TheGaribaldiG or on Instagram @TheGaribaldiGazette. Same handle on YouTube, where you can also watch the show. We'll be back with another podcast for you same time next week. Until then, thanks to Steve. Thanks to you for listening. Enjoy the game this weekend. I mean, endure the game this weekend, and we'll speak to you soon. Bye for now.